Hi everyone, it's Lindsay LeCue here, coaching you to become your own badass for Diablo and LeCue.com. As you know, this month is all about adversity, especially learning how to survive it, and if we can, learning how to thrive in adversity. And today I have a very special guest with me, Clara, who I've had the pleasure of crossing paths with many a time through her business and mine in the past. She's an incredible woman, a huge inspiration. You know, she's modeled for us, she's beautiful, she's talented, she's got an amazing amount of experience in our topic today, which is why I'm interviewing her, but also in building an incredible business that helps others, which to me is a huge inspiration. Clara has the Balance Collective, which is a social enterprise, and essentially she aims at helping others manage their work-life balance through coaching and mentoring. She works predominantly with parents who have those specific challenges of finding balance and time to achieve their goals, but obviously, as we just discussed before we started recording, furry babies count too. So all sorts of people that she helps. So welcome, Clara. Thank you so much for your time today.
No, thank you for asking me. It's very exciting to be here.
Oh, thank you. And is there anything else you want to add about your business? I know specifically you're a social enterprise, and yeah, it's interesting to me how you went through that route rather than possibly the traditional business setup.
So for me, my corporate career, the bulk of my corporate career has been working in not-for-profit, so it was really important for me when I went down the route of running the Balance Collective that I still had those elements of societal impact. And the one thing that I'm working towards is to reduce maternal unemployment or underemployment. And underemployment is something that's very common for parents. It basically means you're not working to your full potential.
Right.
Because, you know, you need flexible hours, which often, unfortunately, in this day and age, often means less responsibility and less impact.
Sure.
Don't work at all. So on the flip side, that people, you know, are very passionate about the career, but it sacrifices some of their, you know, family time.
Yeah.
But the thing I was very aware of is that not everybody can or will afford to pay for the services I offer. For certain groups that are quite significantly away from work, have been out of work.
Yeah.
But what I do is a proportion of what I offer goes to other charities or other social enterprises to help people.
That's amazing.
That is going in and doing workshops around confidence, or running workshops but hosting them at other social enterprise locations, so the money goes to another social enterprise rather than a private organisation. So it's trying to balance it, but the thing that's important when I talk about social enterprise is a business, and the profits I use
That's amazing. That's amazing. And so inspiring that you choose to use your wealth of skills in that way. And I know our listeners will get a great deal from your chat today. So thank you. So obviously it's Adversity Month in Diablo and LeCue this month. And I know from things that you've shared yourself on social media that you've been through, you know, an incredibly difficult journey in relation to having your children and that sort of thing. So, you know, do you want to start telling our listeners a little bit about your journey, and we'll go from there?
Yeah, sure. So, like a lot of people, myself and my husband decided we're going to have babies. Yeah, because that's very easy. And actually, for our first daughter, who's now 13, which I don't understand how she's been 13, so I'm only 21. caught quite easily, you know, fairly textbook pregnancy. And then we decided, right, we want another one when my eldest was about 2.5. And that's when all of, sort of the struggle started. So after many, many months of trying and nothing happening, and then having no period at all, but being told I could be pregnant, I discovered I have got polycystic ovaries, which is a hormonal issue, which means you don't ovulate very regularly. They can lead to issues around what they call secondary fertility.
Yeah.
And we were told that you may not have another child, you probably were very lucky with your daughter, but we'll send you off for fertility treatment. Wonderful. Now, bizarrely, as we were waiting for that appointment, I discovered I was pregnant again.
Oh, okay.
Without having a period.
Wow.
Without the joy of polycystic go with. And basically, I have a towel when I'm pregnant, and I go on tea and milk.
Right.
I was at work one day, and I was pouring an old cup of tea down the sink. I thought, oh my goodness, I think I'm going to be sick.
And then went,
oh, okay. Discovered I was pregnant. Actually phoned up the NHS helpline to say, can polycystic ovaries give you a positive pregnancy test? Pregnancy hormones give you a positive pregnancy test.
Oh, yeah.
So obviously we were very excited, a little bit anxious. Went along to our 12-week scan, which was ironically the week that we were supposed to go to the fertility specialist. And
right.
Because of that scan, we'd had a miscarriage. So scan started, absolutely no heartbeat. Obviously, we were devastated. Went through the process that you do when you have something like that, double checking, deciding how to manage the miscarriage. And that was really, really hard. It was the first time actually anyone in my family, well, there's a family member that's gone through multiple miscarriages, but my immediate family, my friends, I hadn't. That was my phone making a message. I hadn't been through that, and I felt very alone. Didn't really talk about it very much. Had a little bit of time off work, went back to work. And then after that, it was scary, but we decided a year later, we think we're ready to try again.
Yeah.
Got pregnant again, and was totally in denial about it, even though quite obvious I was pregnant. I was dry heaving, I was weeping, refused to do a test because I didn't even want to think about it.
Yeah.
Eventually did, again, positive, and we decided to go for an scan.
Yeah.
For some reassurance. And we did, and beautiful little baby was kicking around, spinning around, and I discovered I was nearly 14 weeks pregnant.
Oh, wow.
It was all very exciting, and we had all the tests done, and I remember an email coming through going, so far so good, looking really healthy, wonderful. So then went along to our 20-week scan.
Yeah.
Thinking, got past that 12 weeks, there's nothing that could happen, which means we couldn't take our baby home. Lo and behold, as soon as the scan started, we could tell it was all like buzzing.
Right.
And the sonographer said, oh, have you lost any water? I thought, well, I don't think I have. I hope I would have noticed something like that. Lots of tests, lots of silence, very grim. She said, I'm very sorry, I can't see any working kidneys on the baby.
Mm.
And I was like, right. Okay, well, surely we can just get the baby for 24 weeks and then we can have baby and then it can be just, no. And we can get you back in to see a good doctor. So several scans later, it turns out our little boy had Potter syndrome, which for him meant that he was what they call incompatible with life.
Right.
I'm a bit of an expert on the usage of amniotic fluid after this incident. So what happens with babies that have fluid issues is if the rest of the baby is developing as it should be, swallowing, breathing in fluid, the kidneys, lack of kidneys, means that things basically don't get things back out. So the baby's lungs don't develop. And at this stage in sort of medical technology, this is the thing. So they basically said he won't begin to bring the baby home. They won't be able to breathe. So you can either go full term if you wish, that's absolutely fine, or you can choose to have the baby now. So we decided to have him early. 20 weeks and 10 days. So it's been in shock. You sort of expect. You look at the statistics of miscarriage, I've ticked that off, I've had my miscarriage, so I'll be fine now. And a year later to go through that was just so unexpected and shocking. But also in a really bizarre way, in some ways easier to handle than the miscarriage.
Really?
Yeah, which is, in terms of the fallout was different, but actually in the moment we got to meet him. We knew he was a little boy, he had a funeral. I had support from the hospital. And actually just witnessing how people treat you having a miscarriage at 9 weeks.
Yeah.
The baby at 21. it's almost like you're allowed to grieve 21 weeks.
Yeah.
But, you know, the miscarriage is like, wow.
Yeah, I understand that,
yeah. You get all those types of things that come back. Yeah, so it was, you know, our journey to, you know, we now have a young child. So the miscarriage was in 2009, and we had our little girl maybe two years after we lost our little boy.
Yeah.
But the Harley hasn't been signed off on the genetics or anything when I was pregnant with it, so we didn't know for a fact why he had his kidney problem.
Right.
So it's been a rollercoaster.
Oh, I can't even imagine, yeah.
Yeah.
And I imagine, again, you know, I say these things to help people understand that when women have been through certain journeys, and then when you became pregnant with your second daughter, your daughter, your youngest daughter now, I think sometimes people expect you to be elated and, oh, it's all fine now, and you have to appreciate and be sensitive around people that... Yeah. It isn't as black and white as that. And when you have a history, you have to, you're nervous, you know, right up until, you know, even when you bring them home, you know.
Yeah.
So it's people understanding to give you space to react however you need to your own pregnancy. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, what I found really interesting about the pregnancy with Lily is, it got to a point where I stopped being scared of it happening again. I got more scared at the point that I was ready to try again. It would be too late.
Right. Okay.
So it was almost like a, you know, both options were scary, but which was the least scary. I remember sitting and talking to my mom and a couple of my friends to say, I'm gonna enjoy the pregnancy as long as it lasts.
That's incredible.
I can't ever imagine thinking like that before. And obviously it was scary, and I hadn't noticed, because my manager that pulled me up on it, that in the run-up to any hospital appointment I'd end up going home sick because I was being nauseous, and actually I hadn't really even put those two points together. But you know, but we were constructive with it, you know, we had all the tests that we could possibly do for our little boy.
Yeah.
Just to check, you know, for example, I had forgotten folks and my eldest daughter's history, and we had all the scans, you know, we got offered to Lily. We went through hypnobirthing, did a big fear release exercise. So I think it's acknowledging that, yes, you are scared, and actually scared. And it's not going to, not being scared or being scared isn't going to influence the outcome at all in any way.
Of course,
but you have to acknowledge it. I've probably done that. Book on it, and I've mentioned in the book that we, you know, when you go through anything like this, it's trauma.
Yeah.
It's a sudden and unexpected loss.
Yeah.
And people don't necessarily see a fertility journey almost as traumatic.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, even you know, the most textbook pregnancy can have elements of trauma and panic and worry. But for, you know, for both of our losses, it was totally unexpected. And you know, especially for our little boy, you know, we didn't see it coming with our miscarriage and signs, you know, with our boy, and it's about learning how to bring it into your life in a positive way, and understanding what you can and can't control. And I think for me, after my little boy, I ended up quite clinically depressed, ended up on counselling, unsurprisingly, because I felt like I need to control certain things now.
Yeah.
Rather than just temporarily allowing myself to sit into this point that this is really rubbish.
Yeah.
I almost, you know, everyone was like, oh, you're so brave, so brave. And I thought, well, I can't say that I'm not, because everyone thinks I am. And actually, there's some strength in going, I'm not okay.
I often see it as, you know, when you have emotions are like a knock at the door, and if you don't answer the door, they come, you know, they end up breaking the door down, don't they? And that's when we get into trouble. And I think that's quite a nice analogy for it, really. And it's,
definitely,
you know, a lot of the things.
But,
Yeah, a lot of the things that I've talked about this month is saying, you know, even though you can come up with tools and techniques to help you through it, none of them are going to take the sadness or the grieving process away from what you're going through. But what they do is just simply get you through the next 10 minutes, the next hour, the next social situation where, you know, for me, it was being around, you know, getting invited to christenings and... You know, it created a huge amount of social anxiety in me, and I don't have social anxiety in any other aspect of my life. I can walk into a network meeting and say hi to anyone I like, and I'm confident in that business side of me. But putting myself in those, you know, it creates so many domino effects in so many parts of your lives, and you do somewhat become a hermit to avoid the risk of toppling. You may have a okay morning and feel a bit better that day, and then go into a social situation where someone says something and they don't know or they don't mean to, but it knocks you off your balance. So you just sort of start going, I'm going to avoid every situation possible, so I don't risk that.
Yeah, and it's not feasible. I know for me, a big thing, a big shift in my head, thinking I'm going to live my life, I'm going to live the life I've got, not the life I want.
That's incredible.
Because actually, that, you know, there was a time that, you know, I'd sit and look at my little girl and I think, you know, I'd be looking at old pictures and think, oh, her little brother would look like this, probably doing this, and actually I was missing out on life that I've got in front of me. And actually, you probably don't know this, but the Sugarbillies audition that I did was like a real big deal for me.
Oh, really?
Because I remember sitting there going, I always wanted to model as I was younger. And I wasn't big enough, I wasn't sort of the right size, the plus size, I was too big for regular and all that stuff. Sugarbillies came up, and I remember thinking, I'm going to do it because, yes, I want another baby someday, because there were so many things I wasn't doing just in case I got pregnant, or just in case I got pregnant, or just in case. I thought, well, do you know what? You know, my life is how it is now, and I need to live it with what I know. Actually walking into that Sugarbillies thing, because I nearly didn't come, because I thought, well, what if I can't deal with it? What if, you know, people ask me questions? What if? And actually now, you know, it was such an amazing experience. And actually, it didn't make a massive difference when I did eventually become pregnant, because, you know...
I remember you telling me you came and did a shoot and I was squeezing you into a corset, and you told me afterwards that you were pregnant. I thought, oh God, I've squeezed you.
I spent about 3 days googling, like,
oh,
like,
can I wear it?
And then I'm like, actually, this baby's like the size of a fingernail. Like, absolutely fine.
And you looked incredible and radiant, even though I remember in hindsight now you were nibbling on nuts the whole time. And it didn't clock with me at the time. But I'll just recap for listeners who don't know what the Sugarbillies are. So as part that's fine. So part of my LeQ business, a few it was quite near the start, really, probably about 8 years ago or so now. That I developed was a small pinup modelling agency, which we don't do anymore just because other parts of the business have sort of taken over. But so we did a call out, really, for models to come and see whether they wanted to audition and take some photos. And, you know, I remember Clara coming and thinking, yeah, this is exactly what we want. Just beautiful figure, natural figure. And, you know, you're lovely and tall, but that doesn't matter. You know, we took every different size. Pinup modelling is a really wonderful thing because it's acceptant of bodies of every shape and size and form and proportion. And it's really about confidence. It's about a certain look that we create, and I absolutely love that part of it. And whenever we use models in anything to do with our business, we don't use models, we use customers, and we use people we know or people who pass by, and we go, oh, do you want to come and do a shoot? And it might be that they have a cute look or a cool hair color, or, you know, something unique that we've not shot before, so we can represent every possible type of person and show you can look incredible and feel incredible, which is more important to me in this whole context of, you know, getting dressed up and having fun. And so just explaining that to people so you understand the context, but that makes me happy to know that it was positive, because it was a fun thing to do for all of us, and we did some really cool shoots.
And met some lovely stuff to you, and you know, I've got people that I'm still in contact with now off the back of that. And I think that's really important when you go through, you know, obviously my situation and, you know, the babies and all that type of thing. Parenthood anyway, you know, growing up and becoming an adult can be really difficult. And when something like that happens, it's really hard, because I use the analogy of sliding doors quite a lot. You know, as soon as you decide you want the baby, you imagine a life. And then as soon as you get a positive pregnancy test, you imagine a life. And all these types of things that happen. And it's really hard to recalibrate because you almost go into limbo.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to make decisions. My first and my second pregnancy, so my first miscarriage, I was offered an opportunity for promotion at work. I turned it down.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be leaving in 9 months' time. Then lost the baby. Then ended up applying for the job in like 2 days. Then got it, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
And that in part has led me to where I am now. But again, you know, we can't put our lives on hold for what may or may not happen.
Yeah.
We need to live with what we're given.
And that's an amazing piece of advice, and I wish I'd heard that from you when I was going through it, because I think that was a real struggle I had. It was each time our IVF failed, it is the emotion over losing that little embryo. And it was really interesting what you said about that really resonated with me, how people treat you at different stages.
Yeah.
And, you know, for us it was termed a chemical pregnancy, not a miscarriage. And I have problems with that term because it minimizes and diminishes your right to feel a loss, because they say, well, it was never going to happen anyway, you just got a line that wasn't meant to be. And especially when you go through IVF and that line is like this elusive pregnancy test line that you think you'll never see, like it was just something that happened to other people. I couldn't even see it in my future. It was so hard. And it's really interesting because, you know, we did experience an incredible amount of insensitivity from the nurse who told us that our pregnancy test was inconclusive, and getting treated in different ways in that way. And you not only experience the emotional and physical loss there, but it's also the loss of hope and the loss of a future that you envisaged. And it doesn't matter at what point and however much you're trying to protect yourself, I think we all visualize that child, don't we, and everything in it, and you have to letting go of that is another big part of it. And and sort of deciding whether you're going to mark dates or not, and how that works for you. And, you know, I remember the time at which that first pregnancy would have, you know, would have been our baby, and thinking I'm going to mark that. And actually on the day I didn't think about it, but then, you know, afterwards I thought, oh, that would have been that. And, you know, and it's funny how that pops back into your head sometimes, and how you choose to mark that. Either you don't want to because you want to go on, or you need to because it's part of your process. And I think people have to respect that, don't they, and let you, you know, do whatever helps you, really.
You know, I have certain friends that will always send me a message on birthday, like, are you okay? And that means so much, because some of the people don't even acknowledge it. And I think that's the thing that most recently I've found the most interesting, that it's taken me the longest to get my head around.
Yeah.
And that was how people were around the time that it happened. And I realised how much anger I was still carrying about what some people said.
Mm.
And I think for me, you know, I've come to the conclusion that actually, out of all the losses that everyone can experience in the world, when it comes to babies and pregnancy, it's horrific. People can't actually get their head around it.
Yeah.
And for some people, even though they're saying the wrong thing, at least they're saying something. And that's taken me 8 years, 8 or 9 years to actually get my head around that myself. But yes, some people said some awfully insensitive things, awfully insensitive, but they were trying.
Yes.
And actually that, you know, I've got to give them credit for that, because I don't know if I've possibly said things that have just thrown a clangor at people.
Yes, I often think that before I went through it, I probably said, when are you going to have a baby? And all those things that I say now, don't say. And it is comes from ignorance and simply just never experiencing it, or never having anyone in your family experiencing it. And when you're going through it, you feel so much anger, and you have to find forgiveness. Like, I had certain friendships that I distanced myself during the time because they did say insensitive things. But I tried to think at the time, don't do anything that will jeopardize that future. In the future I may rebuild those relationships. And often I think they were somewhat unaware and probably just thought, oh, she's retreating because she's going through this, but not necessarily because of their something they said. And it's and I have repaired, you know, 99% of those relationships now, in the sense that I would just sort of start contacting them again and things just back to normal. And there's an element of forgiveness to that, but there's also an element of just being in a different mindset and sort of you know, you just move forward, don't you? But when you're going through it, and I think what I feel like a good message to others is, you know, never feel or tell the person that you're offended in any way by their behaviour when you know they're going through something like that. Because if they say, if they just send you a text saying, I'm not coming to your child's first birthday party, or I'm not coming to the christening, or I'm not coming to the baby shower, I'm not even coming to that cocktail party, just say, no worries, look forward to seeing you again soon. You know, don't make it about you, because I'm telling you, the level of offence you're feeling at them not celebrating your child's milestones is minuscule in comparison to what they're going through. And I think it requires a huge amount of empathy and forgiveness on the part of everyone around you, just to allow you to behave in a certain way whilst you're going through it, and having the faith that once things begin to heal, things will return.
Because if someone had lost any other loved one within their family, people are given a bit of space and a bit of understanding.
Of course.
And I always remember, you know, when the miscarriage happened, well, before the miscarriage happened, thinking, oh, that's the worst thing I could possibly go through.
Yeah.
And then I remember sitting in the waiting room with the realisation that I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to give birth to the baby. Like, that's the only thing I'm going to have to do.
Yeah.
And just thinking, that's it, it's going to break me. It's going to absolutely break me. So when you're going through that, you know, other people have to put a bit of perspective on how small your life becomes for a period of time.
Yeah, of course.
And that's, you know, I was having nightmares, but for us there was an issue that technically my little boy was an abortion, which again, you know, it's like the whole chemical pregnancy thing, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because we weren't prepared to wait. If I'd waited to go to 24 weeks and had him, I would have had 12 months of maternity care, he would have had a birth certificate, he'd be named on Lily's as a sibling, all that type of stuff. But you know, there's all of that went on, and people look at it like a medical procedure, and it's like, you know, this is a process. But I think it's hard. I remember some people saying some, you know, quite shocking things. Comparing different situations, and you know. Can you move on now that you've had the funeral? And I'm like, no. But I think the biggest thing, and again, I don't know if you found this with your husband, but how very little support was given to
Dan. Yeah, they're expected to have a different response to it,
And again, you know, I was offered counselling, grief counselling, and again, we sit back and talk about it, and I said, God, I'm sure you were offered it, but did you just not take it? But there seems to be all the focus is put on the mum.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, two people have lost the baby.
Of course.
You know, the thing that really surprised me, you know, several years down the line, is how much it's going to affect our eldest. But she was 4.5 when she lost Hannah. And so she knew about the pregnancy.
Of course.
Told her, you know, she was going to be kicking around. So it is, it's sort of the ripple effect right across the family as well, but is underestimated, I think.
Yeah, and it's the power of semantics as well. You know, you talk about being treated like a medical procedure, you know, certain words are such a trigger, and I feel like the insensitivity around, you've just got to deal with the most difficult of decisions and processes, and to add in the layers of those words is irresponsible in my opinion, because, you know, that's not the point right now, is it? It's something you've got to deal with, and that's hard enough.
And with respect to the hospital, they were fantastic. The midwives were so caring, the doctors were so caring, you know. None of them, you know, we were lucky, I suppose. With the miscarriage, it felt much more medical. But with everybody else, they were, you know, they were absolutely wonderful.
That's good.
We had bereavement midwives, we were in the bereavement suite. You know, they were very caring and loving. But when you're filling in paperwork, termination due to medical fetal abnormality.
No, that's not.
You know, so it is. I think that for me, as you know, I'm a talker, and I think that's been such a real surprise, because I ended up having 5 weeks of work in total, 4 weeks and then a week over I was so open about what happened, the amount of people at the place that I worked at the time coming to me and telling their losses, you know, what one staff member had lost an adult child, parents, we've got to stick together, and actually there's so many generations of people that have gone through similar things.
This is one of the surprising things I found, how many people reached out to me, and it was actually customers who I'd spent time with and chatted to, and we were both going through IVF at the same time. We had no idea.
Right.
You know, you know, people who are pregnant now and if they had their children as well or not, and you know, people who've reached out, and you just think, oh, what, you know, did anything come out of my mouth? And you hope it hasn't, but you know, this is my mission now. It's a silent subject, and I think for me, it's not. It's about supporting people going through it, but I just feel like there's a huge piece of education for everyone else around, because that was one of the difficultest things for us, was people just choosing whether to share it, choosing who to share it with, and people don't know what to say. And it's not their fault, but it's just a case of making like actual genuine advice being out there. And I remember my sister saying to me, she said, I used to Google all the time, like, what to do when this happens to your sister. And she said, you know, and I appreciate that. And she, you know, she said she learned that listening was the best. And for me, it was people always giving advice, especially when you get advice from people who've got three kids and they conceived within a week of deciding each time. You sort of go, I don't need to hear from you that I should go on a holiday, you know, or you want to punch them in the gob, don't you? But I guess they mean well, and it's just their busy lives, and things come out of our mouths. But it's about education for me, with just everyone else around you.
You know, for me, you know, I've got a 6.5 age year gap between the two, and everyone's like, oh, that's a big age gap. And I'm like, and sometimes, you know, I choose to make people uncomfortable. You know, well, actually, you know, we didn't choose it, but I lost two pregnancies in between my girls. And again, I remember someone telling me, until it happened, what, you know, me and my husband Scott went through, they'd never make assumptions around age gap. It interesting how some people assume one of my children were a mistake because of the age gap.
Yeah, oh God.
You know, and, you know, either the older one or the younger one. And you think, well, they were both very, very, you know, all of my pregnancies were very wanted, very careful. But then there's conversations like, again, which, you know, hadn't even crossed my mind. So when we had Lily, Grace was 6.5, and she said, if Callum had lived with Lily, would you have had Lily as well?
Oh God.
And you're like, oh, so again, it's all of these things that, I think that's the biggest lesson that I've learned, actually, that it doesn't just affect the mum, it affects everybody around you.
Yeah.
You know, the grandparents are grieving for the grandchild that wasn't to be, just their own child.
Of course,
The siblings dependent on their age are grieving for it, and I think in a weird way it helped us having to explain things to, at the time, 4.5, 5-year-old, very bright, you know, it's great, like, very switched on. We have to explain things to her. We're not religious, so we didn't do the whole, you know, baby died and gone to heaven. Medical with her. And it made us deal with it.
Yeah.
Because adults don't want to talk about it, but children want to know.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, the innocence of children, and the questions will be quite straightforward, I guess, won't they?
Yeah, and sometimes I'll be like, that's a really good question, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, so I had to go away and look at things. So I think, in a weird way, you know, obviously losing our little boy and the knock-on effect of that was, you know, quite life-changing. But I feel like I wouldn't, it sounds very twin, but I wouldn't be the person I am now if I hadn't gone through that. You know, all of a sudden, what I was prepared, you know, the things that I was prepared to risk, things that I thought, you know, before we, you know, we had the losses, you know, my career, I had to have a certain title, I had to have a certain salary, I had to have a certain status. That was such a big deal to me. And actually, what you're prepared to fight tooth and nail to hang on to is very, very small.
Yeah.
Be prepared to take more risks, you're prepared to try more things.
Yeah.
Once you've got this centered base of things around you, everything else is just dust.
And I completely agree. I used to find that the smallest things would get me wound up, and now, honestly, the biggest things happen, I'm like, nothing in comparison.
Yeah.
So in a way, it gives you this sort of strength, but just this kind of c'est la vie attitude, doesn't it, in a way?
Yeah, I think I react to change very differently. At the point when sort of the depression kicked in, and I think now on hindsight, I had postnatal anxiety when I went back to work with Lily.
Yeah.
I sort of, anything that felt very unexpected would spin me a lot more than it used to. But I find ways of dealing with that. I sort of think, so the whole journey into the Balance Collective came from returning to work. I work very hard, and I'm lucky, and I work very hard. But going back part time was a fairly simple negotiation. It didn't impact my seniority. I still got the career progression I needed. I had a really lovely team, a job I loved. But I was, oh my goodness, I was crying. I was like grieving for 2 months.
Yeah.
I got heartbroken going back to work.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, if I feel like this and I've got all the boxes ticked, how are people that are not going back to what they want or not getting to work, all those types of things, being stressed, feeling anxious, how are they coping? So actually that's what led into starting the Balance Collective, because I thought, well, I need somebody that understands what it's like to be an ambitious working parent. And I went and had a look for a coach, and I couldn't really find anyone that I, in 2013, I really connected with.
Yeah.
I thought, what a lot of entrepreneurs do.
I'm
going to be that
person. Yeah, I mean, the best business ideas come from needing that yourself and not finding it, doesn't it? Yeah, absolutely. And then you truly believe in what you're offering because you feel that need for it. Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah. Definitely. So just a quick question. Do you find, when you were going through it all, did you find that you went through the process of consciously making decisions to, if you like, arm yourself with methods to make yourself feel better or to get through, did you find that it was simply a learning curve? I think, is it hindsight now that allows you to see what you happened, or did you sort of push yourself through that?
So what I tended to do, which is my default setting for anything that struggled, I just chucked myself into something new. So I decided to do a project management qualification through work, and I wanted to go and learn how to do something I always wanted to do for a while, which was sugar craft. But actually what that meant was that I was very consciously pushing everything else away. I sort of started to embrace the life that I had, but felt more guilty about it. And I was seeing a grief counsellor. But I think that the biggest difference that I found was this for me, especially with our little boy situation. I felt responsible. Not responsible for what happened, because, I'm not a geneticist, I can't do that. But the decision for having when I had him, how we had him, all that type of stuff, I felt weighed very heavily on my shoulders. And until we got the post-mortem through, there was a small seed of doubt in my mind that he wasn't actually as poorly as they said he was. So then there was this element of, oh my goodness, what have I made a mistake? And actually it took several months to get the post-mortem back. So that was all going on. And what I needed and what really helped to switch in my head was having, I moved to counselling from an organisation called Trust that are in Birmingham, that are child bereavement charity. I moved to see them, and actually they allowed me to walk through the alternative. Nobody else had allowed me to do that. Everybody else said you shouldn't feel like that. Oh no, you did the right thing. Oh, you're so wrong.
Yeah.
But you tend to go quite insular.
Yeah.
What I needed for me was to go, okay, if I hadn't have done that, what other options were they, and what would they have looked like? And actually walking through those other options made me realise it was horrible and this was the only option we could have. And actually we had 3 different doctors. We had the best prenatal scanner in the UK. Went to see him before we made the decision. I sat and looked, I researched all those types of things. And I think the biggest thing for me with hindsight was being allowed to walk through the other option.
Yeah.
Being allowed to actually share how I felt.
Yeah.
Because a lot of other people, and I suppose this is advice for anyone who's going through with their friends or family, don't tell them, don't try and stop people talking.
Yes.
Don't try and make them feel better.
Yes. Oh, I agree with that. Yeah.
People sometimes just need to unlock load, because otherwise what happens, you turn it in wood, that fear, that frustration, or that anger, or that blame gets internalised.
Absolutely.
So for me, with hindsight, the big turning point was being allowed to go, okay, if we hadn't had, if we hadn't had the baby at nearly 21 weeks, the other options would have been this, this, or this. How would that have looked? What would you have done about work? What would you have done to your daughter? How would you have dealt with people asking?
Mm.
All those types of things. And obviously this can vary depending on the different situations, but it's almost living out the alternative and making you realise the information that you've got to make the decision that you made. So that's important to me. And I think second of all, with just accepting it takes time.
Yeah.
Like, grief is a process.
Absolutely.
And I've done a lot of research around the different models of grief. You know, people always think of the grief, the grief curve. There's probably about four main themes of grief now.
Yeah.
So quite often people will compare grief like for life.
Yeah.
I've only ever experienced the grief of losing a grandparent. So I was sort of comparing it with that.
Yeah.
I couldn't quite understand why it wasn't following the same process. So,
of course, yeah.
You know, for me, it was being allowed to talk through the alternatives and understanding very practically what had happened up to that point. It was accepting the grief, and it was actually what I call sort of accepting the new normal.
Yeah.
This is the reality of what I've got.
Yeah.
And that's taking the moments of joy. That, you know, you can feel exceptionally sad and exceptionally grief-filled and have a moment of pure joy.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yes, and not feeling guilty for moving forward in other things. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and for me, it was little things like, you know, I couldn't do the sugar belief stuff if I was pregnant because, you know, the dress
was
there were certain things that we've done that we booked before I found out I was pregnant, and then thought, well, I would have been pregnant. And it's not ever being happy with what happened. You know,
no.
I'm never going to be happy with what happened. It's always going, but this is what I've got now.
Yeah.
So I sort of need to make the most of it.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of your spiritual beliefs, you've got one life, and you can either spend the next 10, 20 years being angry.
Yeah.
You can't get what you want.
Yeah.
Or you can make the most of what you have with still having the hope that different things.
I think that's incredibly insightful, and I do, I agree. I feel like we've got quite similar personalities in the sense that we're quite entrepreneurial, and we certainly, you know, we set a goal and we smash it, don't we? We go for it, life's for taking. And then when these things happen in our lives that we don't have control over, our particular personality types kind of reel and go, I'm sorry, what? Like, I thought I decided I was going to do something. I put the steps in place. I followed my project plan. You know, both come from project backgrounds. And and life doesn't go like that. And you have to retrain yourself, don't you? And acceptance was a huge thing for me. And something that my mum taught me, because she's a mindfulness coach. And, you know, certainly my journey has sort of prompted her to do a lot of research into helping people in that specific type of thing, because she's, like you said, the grandparents grieve as well, don't they? And it was certainly difficult for her to see her daughter in pain and her daughter, you know, the potential of those grandchildren. And so I think you've put it so succinctly, and I could talk to you forever, because you've got such an incredible mindset, and I think you're such an inspiration to show people that now it might seem like everything's fine, but I mean, sure, the huge amount of time and the process that you've gone through and the strength that you've found to get yourself where you are is, nothing's a quick fix, and nothing is this an answer or a solution to this problem, but time and focus and different things can at least, like you say, appreciate what you've got right now and be mindful in that. And I just thank you so much for sharing your story, because I just, the more that we talk about these things, I think the more we will help others to avoid putting their foot in their mouth. Or, you know, certainly what was expressed to me when I shared my first podcast about my story was women who just came and said, oh, it's just someone I can talk to about it, because I don't want to tell work. And sometimes I don't even want to tell my family because I don't want the questions, or they're very traditional and they won't understand why we're doing this, and et cetera, et cetera. So thank you so much. And I just want to finish off, if you could please just let all our listeners know how they can get in contact with you, and if they want to use any of your services or come to you for any coaching or anything, let us know how they can get in touch.
Yes, well, obviously there is a website, which is thebalancecollective.co.uk. Mm-hmm. That's thebalancecollective.co.uk. I have a weekly blog on there, so you can get a bit of a feel. You know, there's everything from digital techniques. I always have a monthly inspiring parent, but obviously I would like to invite you to be on there as well. I have a book club. I do a monthly book club. I read a lot, and a lot of people don't have the time. So I call myself Claire and Crypto. put that all together. So there's also the Facebook page as well, which is The Balance Collective. And I have a group called The Balance Collective with Claire and Wilcox. So we tend to talk about everything around careers, flexible working, work-life balance, parenting, those types of things. What I find quite interesting is, because I am quite public with my journey, a lot of the clients that come to me for return to work coaching or career coaching have had a challenging journey. You know, it's not something that I specialise in, but I have that lived experience. I get what it's like to go back to work when that baby has been a long time.
Yes. That's it. When you're a businesswoman before you become a mum, and you've wanted to become a mum for a long time, there's a real pull in you. You know, I feel that guilt of, I really want to do work. And then I think, I've waited so long for her. Why am I pulling, you know, why am I wanting to do other things than just be with her all day? But it's a balance, exactly as you coach and do, because it's important to be you, because a happy mum, I think, is conducive to happy children, you know.
The thing I'd like to maybe end on, you know, with that in mind, is that we are people before we're parents.
Yes.
And it's being a role model.
Yeah.
So my girl, you know, my eldest has seen me as an employee and working from home. My youngest has only really remembered me as working from home.
Yeah.
But they know what I do, how I do it, why I do it. They've been working. They see the options. And actually, you know, finding my daughter when she was 10 wrote a blog for me, which makes me giggle because it's like the most read blog out of my whole life. But it's what a child thinks of working parents.
Yeah.
Don't feel guilty if you really enjoy what you're doing, because you show me what's possible.
Oh, incredible.
So I think, you know, it's bearing that in mind. It's all about quality over quantity.
Absolutely. Oh, well, thank you so much, and I'm sure that many of our listeners will reach out to you in whatever capacity. Thank you everyone for listening. This has been Clara of the Balance Collective, and I'm Lindsay LeCue, coaching you to become your own badass for Diablo and LeCue.com. So thank you, and I look forward to getting your feedback on our group as well. So come and join us on Facebook. Take care, guys. Goodbye.
Bye.